Good afternoon. I think that the most difficult part in a conference is to come up with some introductory phrases, but by luck, the previous speaker just spoke about quantum groups and cosmological constants, and this serves me very well, because this time what I'm going to talk to you about quantum groups. So most people in the field know that when a cosmological constant is added to the mix, somehow quantum groups emerge. But my guess is that very few know explicitly how this happens. So this is what I'm going to tell you about. An explicit construction of quantum groups when you have cosmological constants. This is part of my PhD work under the supervision of Alejandro Perez in Marseille. Yes, there is something missed. Oh, no, it's okay. So the setting is we are in 2 plus 1 dimensions without matter in Euclidean signature, and for the moment, but only for the moment, for the first half of my talk, we'll have a non-zero cosmological constant. And this is in fact work done by Karim Nui and Alejandro Perez in 2004. And the quantization method that they chose is to follow the Dirac program. Why I'm presenting it? Because otherwise it would be very difficult for you to understand the work done by Alejandro Perez and myself in the last 2 years. So since I've spoken about the Dirac quantization program, let me please briefly remind it to you. The idea is to build some big Hilbert space called the auxiliary Hilbert space. And if you deal with the theory with constraints, and 2 plus 1 and general relativity is a theory with constraints, to promote these constraints to self-adjoint operators acting in this space, then find the solutions to these constraints and in a new Hilbert space, and on it construct a new scalar product. Please allow me to draw your attention on the fact that solving the constraints does not necessarily naively mean finding the kernel of the constraints, because sometimes the solution to the constraints are of infinite norm or have some other awkward properties, and it so happens that these solutions live in some larger spaces like the dual of the initial space. So solving the constraints is not always an easy thing. In connection variables, the action of general relativity is the one that you can see there, and we have three kinds of constraints: the Gauss constraint, the vector constraint, and the scalar constraint. Now, quantizing the scalar constraint and solving it is a difficult job. So, fortunately, in three dimensions, the previous two set of constraints, that is the vector and the scalar one, can be replaced by what is called the curvature constraints that are FABI equal to zero. The auxiliary Hilbert space is a completion of the space of cylindrical functions, as you know it, and the solution to the Gauss constraint is a space of a spin network space that is called the kinematical Hilbert space. This is the easy part of the theory. So what we are interested in is to solve the constraint, the curvature constraints, and build a physical scalar product. The way to do it is to construct a projector. In fact, it's not really a projector in the mathematical sense, but it has some nice properties that make this this name intuitive. So that projector P, and then to apply P to states in the kinematical Hilbert space, and these projected states will be our physical states. Now, the projector P is defined, as you can see, but this is just a formal definition. It needs a regularization in order to make sense of that expression. And the regularization, I won't enter into these technical details. They are presented clearly in the paper by Karim Nui and Alejandro Perez. Let me just say that the way to do it is to choose a triangulation of the space, of the slice of space-time, the space, with cells smaller in diameter than some chosen epsilon, and to express the small integral that appears as an exponent, so the integral over sigma, is some limit of a Riemann sum, where the f of a is now considered in points inside the cells. And then to replace f of a in such a point with a holonomy around a small curve, closed curve around that point. So the idea is to go from curvature to holonomies. And one obtains that the physical scalar product is given by that formula that you can see. Now, let's add the cosmological constant to the mix and get to the part that we are, I'm working on with Alejandro Perez. Please notice that in the right hand side of the equality, when you have the sum over JP, imagine that JP for the moment is equal to 1. What you get is a holonomy in spin 1 that you can decompose in spin half representations, and you get that kind of crossings. Yes, this kind of crossings. And it's precisely here that the effects of the cosmological constant will be concentrated. Well, I anticipated a little bit. The idea is that the action is the one that you can see here, and the curvature constraints becomes F IAB of A lambda equal to 0 instead of just F IAB equal to 0, where A lambda is just a perturbation of the initial connection without cosmological constant. So you take a connection and you add to it some term depending on the cosmological constant. Now you can use exactly the same trick as in the vanishing cosmological constant. So you express the curvature in terms of the holonomy. And you get to those kind of crossings that raise problems. And I won't enter into the details, the calculations are quite technical, but the idea is that when you deal with a vanishing cosmological constant, in order to develop crossings, you use what is called the binary identity. Well, the result obtained by Alejandro Perez and myself is that when you have a cosmological constant, a non-vanishing one, you develop crossings according to this kind of relation that we would like to call the quantum binary identity. And please also notice that when you take the cosmological constant to be 0, then A is equal to 1 by this relation. So you get the Penrose's usual binary identity. So how do we do the quantization? Well, we express the holonomy in the classical way as the first-order integral, and then we directly replace in A lambda here the A's and the E's here. So we replace the A's and the E's. The E's we replace them with the functional derivatives. It is easy to check that when you act in the cosmological setting on the vacuum with a curve, you can feel no cosmological effects. So you get the usual holonomy. You don't feel the effect of the cosmological constant. But when you cross with a curve, another pre-existing curve, you get cosmological effects. And in general, the formula that you get is this one. Now, with a clever choice of some ordering of matrices that I shall not explain here because it's quite technical, so with that clever choice, you get exactly this formula, which is known in the theory of representation of quantum groups. Now, these objects, these crossings, satisfy the three Rademeister moves. The first one is a perturbed one. But when you take A to be 1, that is lambda to be 0, you get exactly the classical first Rademeister move. The other two are unchanged, as you can see. Now, let us denote by R this crossing, and then now please pay attention to the fact that the strand going from top left to down right is above the other one, because it does matter who is above and who is beneath. It matters a lot, in fact. So with this choice, please note first of all that this is R. Once again, please compare it. This with the upper half of this diagram, this is R, combined with some lower half, give you identity. This means that the lower half here must be R minus 1. Here. Okay. The only thing that if we get to the third Rademeister move here, and we read it from top to bottom, let's look at the left-hand side, for example. Here you've got R minus 1, and here this trend is the identity. So we can write it algebraically as R minus 1, tensor identity. Now we go down, here you've got an identity, here you've got an R. Look, identity tensor R. So you read all the diagram from top to bottom and you get this algebraic relation, and if you reorder it a little bit in order to get rid of the R power minus 1, you get what is known in the literature as the Braid equation. Some people calling it the Young-Baxter equation. Which is a nice thing because it leads almost directly to what is called the bi-algebra. And this brings us very close to the quantum group that we are looking for. But in order to get this bi-algebra, one needs to have this R in an explicit form. So we can consider it to be an operator from C-square tensor C-square to C-square tensor C-square. And I won't show you why, but it's part of the technicalities of the work that I do with Alejandro Perez. The explicit form of this R is this one. And having an explicit form of R, one can now apply what is called in the literature the Fadeev-Reshetihin-Takhtajan construction. That is, having such a matrix which satisfies the Braid equation, there is a way found by these three authors in an article in 88, I believe, to obtain what is called a bi-algebra. Now, that once you it's a sort of algorithm, and once you have this bi-algebra, it's quite easy to also build what is called an antipodal map, and once you have a bi-algebra and a compatible antipodal map, you get what is called a Hopf algebra. Now, we are very close to getting a quantum group. One more technical condition must be met in order to call a Hopf algebra a quantum group. And this is the main result that I wanted to show you, to present to you. So the calculations are quite technical, but what I would like you to remember from this, as a conclusion from this talk, is that whenever when you want to quantize a 2 plus 1 dimensional gravity according to the Dirac program, one is, with cosmological constant, what one is naturally led to consider a quantum group and to work with representations of quantum groups instead of representation of the SU2 classical group. This is basically the main result that I have obtained so far with Alejandro Perez in our way to quantizing a 2 plus 1 gravity with cosmological constant. Thank you. I haven't come so far in my research. Never used the sign of the cosmological constant. So you can also, I know that there is a problem and that in the literature everybody works with positive cosmological constant. Probably this too is what you're meaning. Well, you can do exactly the same theory with a negative cosmological constant without any problem. It could happen that later on a problem appear when you consider representations of this quantum group, because usually representations are considered at roots of unity. And you have roots of unity when you work with positive cosmological constants. When you have negative cosmological constants, I don't know what to tell you about. Maybe we'll meet next year at loop 08 and I'll have an answer for you.
So the quantum groups seem to be coming from this modified binary identity, right?
Yes.
So the reason you have the modified binary identity, is it because you now have this triad part that's in this connection. You're looking at holonomies of this connection that involves both the usual connection and the triad. Is the modifications of the binary identity coming from the fact you have this triad component?
Well, you know, you do a calculation and you obtain a result. It's difficult to say to what it is due, these results.
Okay.
I don't know if it's the triad that brings these new things to gain.
Is this connection that you...
The part you mean by triad, you mean the part with the cosmological constant added to the connection? Yeah. Yes, of course. This is the one. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Because it involves derivatives. Yes. When you quantize it.
So then the key question would be then what's the motivation for using quantities of this connection?
Yes, just a moment. So the quantum group only appears when you do quantization. Because if you remain on the classical level with a cosmological constant, you don't really feel it in this scheme. Okay. So what was your question?
So is it that this other connection that involves the cosmological constant is more adapted to the dynamics maybe, or I'm not sure?
It appears naturally when you want to consider how the curvature constraints get modified when you add a cosmological constant. So if you define a new connection in the way that I did, you notice that the curvature constraints take almost the same form as in the vanishing cosmological case. This is why you use it.
So this is the first step towards primary quantization for regularize the new constraint. So in order to do that, we have to understand how this acts, and this is so concerning your question. Oh, so the dynamic is what I want to achieve when you inform the constraints. So anything that is
Thank you.